Good morning, listeners. You're welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. My guests this week are Sean Brennan from Chagas, and after that, with me, I have three of the auctioneers and estate agents in the county. My first guest this morning is Sean Brennan from Chagas. And Sean is in the Clonmel office, and he's going to be talking about the work that he is doing, presently doing, with Chagas, as well as what he is studying at the moment, because he is doing a master's, as I understand it. Good morning, Sean, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks very much for having me on.
Great to have you, Sean. Anyway, look, we haven't spoken before, and I'm quite sure my listeners would like to know who Sean Brennan is.
Yeah, so, Jim, I'm doing a master's in agricultural extension and innovation. Basically, that means I'm working in conjunction with Chagas and UCD, completing the master's. So I'm based in the Clonmel Chagas office, doing the work of an advisor, kind of shadowing some of the advisors in the office, whilst also doing assignments and completing a project at the same time, a thesis. So the project will take up most of my time for the coming year in the office. The type of the project is to determine the factors that influence dairy farmers in using the DBI, CBV and sex semen. I'll be sending out a survey to dairy farmers in the coming weeks, trying to gauge their knowledge of it and just assess what is the level of knowledge at ground level.
Right.
And so that'll be going out in the next few weeks. And the reason for the research is basically since the abolition of the milk quota in 2015, the emphasis on dairy farms was to breed for milk production. Mm-hmm. So dairy farmers, but the goal is to have easy calvings and short gestation. And this has kind of led to a decline in the beef genetics in the dairy herd. So dairy farmers can use tools such as the DBI, CBV and sex semen. They can combat this. What the DBI is the Dairy Beef Index. So it's a breeding tool that helps you with a better calf. It's more saleable, but has little effect on calving difficulty and gestation length. It's made up of 49% calving traits. So calving difficulty, gestation length. It's made up of 51% beef traits. So carcass weight and conformation. So it's going to improve the calf. It's presented as a euro value on a star-rated system. It'll improve the returns to the beef farmer. So a beef farmer buying dairy calves off a farmer, then, you know, if he's going to have a better calf then come to slaughter, you'd be looking at a value of over 100 euro for DBI, if you're looking for a good calf. The next thing then is the CBV, which stands for the commercial beef value. So that'll give a better insight into the animal's genetic merit. So if you're looking at a calf at 2 or 3 weeks old, the calf might look good, but, you know, you don't know what the genetics made up of. The value is made up by carcass weight, conformation, fat, facility, and feed intake. It is both within breed type and across breed star ratings. So it just helps the buyer basically select a better calf. And any stock destined for the beef trade who have a sire recorded at birth, they can have a CBV generator for them. And if you're on herd plus and if your sire is recorded, like I said, you know, you'd be able to see what your CBV is, and obviously the higher the CBV, the more likely that animal is to finish at a higher weight of slaughter. And the sex semen then is another thing that will be assessing farmers' knowledge. So if you use sex semen, you're obviously going to increase the number of placements and reduce the amount of dairy bull calves in your herd. So for sex semen to work well, you know, you need to be looking at good fertility, and good fertility management practices are crucial as well. So you're probably going to have a BCS of in and around 3.25. So it's important to assess the BCS of your animals prior to the breeding season. That's crucial for getting them in calf. And having cows cycling regularly as well, it's very important for sex semen to work well. So that's kind of the background to what my project is, Jim. And I'm putting together a survey now at the minute, mm-hmm. and hopefully send that out now to the clients of the Chagas office in the next few weeks.
Okay, now you mentioned two elements there. You mentioned the DBI and you mentioned the consumer one as well. Who gathers that information? Who is responsible for gathering the information that you will be getting from with regard to those two elements of measurement for farmers into the future?
Yeah, so the ICBS put the DBI and the CBB together.
Right, okay.
So the ICBS, you know, they're the generator value. You have to look that up on ICBS. Mm-hmm. You can use Sawyer Advice as well to help with the bull selection. And you'll be able to look at the DBI values and the CBB, similar to the EBI. Yeah.
Yeah. And where do they get their information? You know, if we're looking at the consumer one, for starters, do they have to go to the processors to get the necessary information?
Yeah, so that they generate the commercial beef value, yeah. through the research, yeah. So they're testing different bulls and things. And,
right.
Yeah, that's how they generate the value.
Okay, so but they have to get that information from somebody. So it's the processors, is it, that gets that gives them that information? It's not the customer, is it?
No, it's commercial beef value.
Commercial.
It's expected weight at slaughter. Yeah.
Right. Okay, exactly. it's weight at slaughter. Of course, we're well in tune with the DBI. That's been around for a while, as has EBI. So farmers know what those two mean, but the other one is one that's relatively new, this commercial beef index.
Yeah, and it's now, it can be live on mart boards. You know, if you've a soy recorded, it'll come up when your calves are in the mart, so buyers know exactly what they're buying, really, you know. And it's a good opportunity for dairy farmers who do use it, you know, to show off that this calf is worth something, you know, he's worth value, so you know what you should be getting for your calf.
Right, okay. And that's very important as well from the seller's point of view. Okay, so that's what your master's is all about, Sean. But needless to mention, you won't be spending all your time on that. So your work then, other than trying to do that, as you quite rightly said, it's going to take you most of the year to do it. But will you be doing some field work with farmers?
Yeah, so I'm working closely with Michael Train in the office, dairy advisor, so I'll be attending discussion groups, give them a hand with them things. I'm doing derogation plans in the office at the minute, and this application as well, you know, for single farm payment. So, I'll be busy now for the year ahead, so,
Okay, when I asked you there in the beginning, did you come off a farm yourself, or did you decide after school that you were going to go into agriculture?
Yeah, so I grew up on a dairy farm myself at home in Mooncline, Kilkenny, and always had an interest in agriculture, so that's why I decided to do agricultural science in WIT in Waterford for 4 years. Once I finished that, then, you know, I kind of had an interest in the advisory side of things, so that's why I was interested in doing the Masters. I kind of read up on what it was about and what it entailed, and, no, I thought it was the right fit for me, and, you know, I'm getting on very well with it at the minute.
Okay, you're with Chagas. Which area of Chagas do you like the best? Would you like to be continually working as an advisor, or would you like to work as a researcher?
Yeah, personally, I kind of enjoy meeting the clients and calling out the farms. So probably the advisory side of things for me personally. You know, if you get out of the office, you know, you're dealing with farmers on the ground and, personally, I just find that a bit more interesting. But the research side of things definitely be a good side of it as well.
Yeah, it's a very important side of it. It's only since I gave up farming that I've had a real interest in the research that is being done to help farmers into the future. So the research is very important as well. Look at before I let you go, may I wish you the best of luck with the research for your master's, and I hope you enjoy your time with Chagas in Clonmel.
Thanks very much, Jim, and thanks very much for having me on today.
That's
thank
all
you.
Right. Thank you ever so much, Sean. That, listeners, was Sean Brennan from Chagas, and Sean is in the Clonmel office. Listeners, you may remember last year I spoke to some of the estate agents in Tipperary, all of them REA. They're back again with me to tell me all that's happening with the property market, the leasing market, and anything else that they will come up with regards to what's happening in their business in Tipperary. And they have some lovely stats for me for what happened in the past year. So with me I have Owen Dillon, who is in Nina. I have Seamus Brown from Roscrea, and I have James Lee from Newport. And unfortunately, Our friend John Stokes from Clonmel was unable to meet with us this week. So I'll start off with you, Owen. Thanks very much for coming back. And I'm quite sure a lot has happened nationally first in the past year.
Good morning, Jim. So yeah, REA sold 271 farms in Ireland last year, 2,661 acres. Average price was just under €14,000 an acre. And I suppose the other interesting fact was that a lot of them were cash purchasers buying them, and a lot of them were local farmers who bought them.
Right, okay. So that's quite good that it's local farmers, yeah. Because I suppose here in Tipperary we have a problem, maybe not so much up your part of the county, but as we go down south, all the farms seem to go in the one direction when it comes to anything of any size. Talking about the farms now that were sold, would those farms be split because there might be two farmers who are, have a dairy herd beside it, and they might one of them buy half and the other buy the other half, or a third? And
yes, but
two
most of the larger farms that were sold were split into various lots of 20 or 30 acres.
When you're getting top dollar then for the sales, would that be for smaller lots?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Would you then, in your particular area, own, and would that be the same, would that be the same across the whole country, if we're looking at the whole country, that smaller lots make more money all the time?
Yes.
Yeah. And why is that? Why?
I suppose access to money. It's a lot easier for a farmer to have 100,000 and borrow 100,000 and buy a lot at 200,000 than to buy a lot at €1 million. Yeah, from a pure cash flow point of view, smaller lot sizes, there'll be more demand for it. And the larger the lot size, the fewer bidders you would expect for it.
One type of land that I suppose I'd be particularly interested in is in, we'd say, the near Nina area and catchment of Nina. Is the market for land suitable for forestry? Has the value of that gone up in the last year or so?
I would say yes, but there's very little forestry land around Nina. It would be more James's territory.
I know.
So yes, you would expect it.
Don't worry, I'll be asking James that question very much so. But and I'll be asking, you know, why people are selling and why people are also selling forestry, because that's been on the market as well quite a bit in the last year. Basically then, you would say that nationally things are very buoyant. What's it like in Tipperary?
So I suppose overall in Tipperary, there was 757 acres sold last year, just over €11 million. The average price was just under €15,000 an acre. And again, nearly 90% of them were to local farmers.
Right, okay, so it follows national trend. That's good. Considering we did mention forestry, James, and this time, James, do you want to be called Jim or James?
James is,
yeah. James is okay,
yeah.
But I want to be called Jim.
Yeah, no, we won't confuse any.
That's okay. And James Lee, by the way, for listeners and all the way from Newport and up that part of the world, and that's why we said forestry, that he'd answer all the questions on forestry. Okay, let's take forestry, as we have mentioned it, James. What's it like? I know you're there in the hills, and every time I drive from here to Newport on my way to Limerick, I'm looking at quite a lot of forestry.
Yes, Jim, there's a lot of forestry up around that location. I suppose what we've seen in the last number of years is a lot of plantations have reached 20 years plus in term, which means a lot of all the premiums are gone, that the farmer who has planted the land has taken the premiums out of it, which is obviously tax-free as well. So they're reaching a period, a time where they've decided to dispose of it and get a lump sum, which will be, for the large portion, tax-free as well, because the timber value on the land is tax-free. And you have a lot of, I suppose, private companies and private individuals buying plantations at the minute, because they see it as a safe haven to to hold cash.
Right, and they're only buying it for, you know, you mentioned 20 years. Basically, here in Tipperary, they're only buying it for maximum of 10 years because it's going to have to be a clear fell in yes. 10 years' time.
Yes, 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 that's right. And obviously, with the majority of those, there's a replanting obligation on them.
Of course.
And I suppose with the whole renewable energy and eco-friendly awareness with companies and various things like that, carbon neutral, you know, is a key phrase you hear nowadays. A lot of companies are looking for plantations to, you know, I suppose in a lot of, and it's basically ticking a box for themselves from their carbon viewpoint.
Right, okay. And staying with you, these other two guys here, they don't have cattle mart. How are things going with the cattle business?
The cattle business is quite strong at the moment, very strong. I suppose beef prices are at an all-time high at the minute. The
farmer won't tell you that, by the way.
Well, the farmer is
not getting it. He's not getting it from the factory.
Never getting enough. But okay, the factories are certainly paying well. They might have eased off slightly in the last number of weeks, but we've seen it through the marts. Anything that's factory fit, they're making huge money at the moment. The biggest problem we do see is the cost of inputs hasn't come down enough, and that's what's keeping the margin very tight. So they really would want to be getting every penny they're getting at the moment.
Okay, and of course one other question that's very important to ask you this morning, and that is, what are calf sales like?
Calf sales are very very tricky at the moment, I suppose, and that's been quite straight. Good quality strong calves are making great money, and I'm talking about even good square Friesian calves, good solid whitehead continental calves. You know, you'll get 300-400 plus for those all day long. Even the stronger Friesian calves, they'll make 150 plus easily. But your weaker middle of the road calves are a very, very limited trade. And to be honest, we've had situations where we've had to turn clients away from sales. Calves haven't been strong enough to present.
And are many then of the ones that are sold, are many of them going for export?
A lot of the exporting is probably done direct farm to farm. Yeah. Not a huge amount through the marts at the minute we see. A lot of farmers, you know, buying calves to rear themselves. But there is the export market is still there, and it is still quite strong. But it's a bit early around this part of the country yet.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your stats for the last year then. You had a reasonably good year. A
reasonably solid year. Six farms sold just over 140 acres in total. The average price is just over 9,300 per acre. We saw over 80% of them were cash sales, with just under 70% to local farmers. We've certainly seen so far this year a large number of inquiries from, I suppose, smaller farmers looking to enlarge existing holdings and from larger dairy farmers looking to extend what they have.
Yeah, that seems to be a very buoyant market because a farmer can't expand unless he can get an extra piece of land, and that's going to get more difficult as the years tumble towards 2030 and all the requirements under all these EU regulations are driving farmers mad, I think.
Yes.
To put it mildly. Seamus, can I come to you, the Ross Gray man, Seamus Brown? Now, Seamus, I see you sold quite a bit in Tipperary as well.
I did. Well, actually, believe it or not, they were all in Leash and Offaly. While the office is based in Ross Gray, we sit a mile from the Offaly border and 3 miles from the Leash border. And, you know, they tend to be smaller holdings for some reason in Leash and Offaly. Good farmers around Ross Gray, but farms around Ross Gray come up very seldom. And they tend to pass on. They're very productive farms and progressive farmers, and they tend to be handed on to the next generation and don't seem to come on the market that often. But we would do quite a bit in Leash and Offaly. Our average price then was 14.8 last year, which would be kind of pretty much with the average in nationally and in the area. Yeah, again, 50% were cash sales. 75% of local farmers would have, one or two there would have went to maybe one in particular, to somebody just invest and put money away. But of course, as we know, non-farmer, if you like, just putting the land back up for lease. And of course, that situation has changed now because you have to hold the land or be the owner of the land for 7 years before you can rent it, certainly, and lease it, but you won't get your rent tax free unless you have the land in your name for 7 years. Now it'll probably take very little, very few buyers out of the market, say, going forward. If I don't think it'll make much difference to the price into this year and future years. But I suppose it was probably a good move in a way. It kind of keeps it there for those who are going to farm the land themselves, as opposed to just the pure investors. You would mention forestry now earlier. Mm. I suppose we as we look out from Roscrea, we're looking onto the Slieveloo Mountains. Plenty of forestry in the distance. Again, very hard to get forestry land. We'd have good demand for it because we're in a hen harrier designated area, and a lot of the land is restricted for planting. But inquiries would have come in stronger than previous years. I suppose the increase in the premium payment and grants and so on. It's probably up on 1,000 or 1,500 being offered. Like they're saying, they're going anywhere between 6,500 and 7,000, even maybe if they could get the right bit of ground and the right parcel. So I suppose when land in an area is in limited demand, I suppose or limited supply rather, and demand is there, it can drive the price as well. But you know, the outlook for 2024 is good. You know, we have a number of our long-term leases have been up this year and due for renewal. You know, land, a couple of lettings new to the market would have come in around 400 to 420, softened a little bit from the previous year with the 500s and so on. The renewals, oddly enough, are all coming in around 300. I think if a farmer or landowner is happy, and they understand that they don't want, you know, they have a good relationship with their tenant, they want to renew the lease. And a lot of those leases would be 7 years, 5 to 7 years, and a lot of them were in the region of 2 to 250 an acre, 220, I suppose. We've gotten to the habit now of thinking 3 to 4 to 5 was the norm. It's not that long ago since 200 and 220 and thereabouts, or maybe 190 was a good price 7 years ago. You know, those leases have an uplift then of 100 to 120 euro, 140 euro an acre.
Righto, we'll take a break. Listeners, are you into honey? Because the next people that I met at the Clonmel Farmers Market are the Joneses. I've met Mum, who is Jane, and I've met Robin, who is the daughter, and they have a lovely little stall just inside the gate with honey beautifully displayed. Bees here that won't sting either, which is quite good. I'll start off with you, Jane. We'll leave Mum aside for the moment. Okay, when did you start producing honey?
Well,
I won't say producing honey, but selling it.
The bees produce it. My sister started it as an enterprise in school.
Cool.
Yeah, in second year. So then we kind of decided to jar it and label it and then sell it together. So she does the beekeeping side of it and then I do all the admin and the jarring and labelling. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a good year for honey?
Not this year. Last year was better, I think.
Well, this is 24 now. I'm talking about last
2023, year. Yeah. No, it was. It was an okay year, yeah.
Yeah, okay year.
Yeah.
Because it was a very funny year as well, if you take... We got a lovely bit of weather. People tell me that the best honey was got very early last year.
It was, and kind of the spring crop, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was gotten...
Yeah, yeah, the summer just washed
out. Yeah, the summer,
right, okay.
Yeah.
Stuck. Yeah. Three of us are not like this, so... You're all right, Jane. How many hives, then, has your sister, who is not here with us this morning?
We've 8 of them.
8 hives?
Yeah.
8 hives,
yeah. Yeah.
How much honey do the 8 hives produce?
Oh, could be anything between 50 pounds up.
Per hive.
Yeah, it depends on the year, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how local then to Clonmel are the hives?
So we're based in Moorestown, Powerstown.
Yeah.
We have about 6 different sites that there is.
You have 6 different hives.
Yeah,
and
it's
just one hive in each site.
One or two, yeah.
Yeah,
each,
yeah, yeah. I passed someplace the other day and they had about 10 hives in just one little corner in a field.
Yeah, could have been us.
Okay, could have been us. You say you only have 10 hives.
Someday.
And is it easy then for you to get somebody to give you a corner to put a hive into? Because I gather they're not all on your own property.
No, it was kind of family friends.
Yeah.
So friends that my dad would have and stuff that kind of let us put the hives on their sites. It wasn't random people. It was people that we knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, as a business, how is it going?
What? Getting going.
Yeah.
We're only getting going. They wrote me in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When did you start?
When Lee was in TY, so it was a 2017.
Yeah,
but we only started selling into shops and doing farmers markets this year.
This year.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And what were you doing? Just selling it to friends from home or
from
something?
From our door, yeah.
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 Okay. You go to the hive. The hive is full. The honey is full. How long does it take you from the time that you take the honey out of the hive to put it into a jar to sell it to the customers here or any of the shops?
It's a fairly long process, isn't it?
Yeah, what's the process?
Well, I suppose you're asking kind of a question there.
When it
comes off of, when it, you're extracting it from the hive,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's stored then in buckets. So maybe if you were to go straight from the hive into the jar, I can't really answer. It's not that I can't answer. It depends on on what you actually have to do that day.
Yeah, I know.
But on a time frame, I suppose.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about.
Time frame. Oh, you could have a jar of honey from your hive within 24 hours.
Within 24 hours, so.
But as a business, you're not going to have it like that.
No.
Because it's all done in stages. So when it comes...
I know, and honey is done in stages anyway. As I said there at the beginning, the early part of 2023 was good for honey. And then you'd have got that, and then you'd have put it back, redone the hive, and then you come back to it August or September, and you have to go through all that process, take it out again.
Well, see, that's what happened last year. Like, last year was a great spring, and we were dancing around the place.
Yeah. And summer
was a washout.
Yeah.
Right.
So a lot of beekeepers that we know lost honey.
I know there was a lot of problems then.
Yeah.
And then they had to do an awful lot of feeding the bees over the past winter.
Over the winter, because the stocks would have been low.
Yeah,
Are
you doing well here now at the farmers market?
Well, I'm actually only back from France, so Mum has been.
Oh, you're back from France.
I've been taking.
Mum has been doing it.
I've been doing the.
Yeah.
We said we'd do it this year, so.
Yeah. You know, it's a big commitment now.
It is a big commitment.
Yeah.
But we're getting out there. We're getting to talk to our customers that we'd never got to do before.
Okay.
So that's the big thing.
Okay.
Tell everyone why we're here.
Now you tell everybody why you're here.
Why are we here? We're here to say hello.
Right.
That we're local.
Yeah.
And that our honey is—it's a great product, and it's not heated. It's filtered through a core strainer, and it's as natural as you're going to get. It's—it's it's not processed the way it's processed in your supermarkets.
Right, and it's all from Clonmel and the surrounds.
Yes.
So you're eating something that has been produced locally. And the good thing about it is, you're a young person here. Why aren't there more young people like yourself, Robin, here?
I don't know. We've fairly busy lives.
If you weren't here for the honey, would you come down to buy something from some of the other people, stallholders?
I probably would.
What?
Yeah.
Would you be into free-range chickens like they're here beside me?
No, but the cakes and the jams and things like that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, look, I wish both of you the best of luck.
Thank you.
I hope you sell an awful lot of honey. Mind those bees. They're very, very important.
They are.
And a big thanks for talking to me. Okay, I'm now with the early bird, and the early bird here in the market sells eggs. Okay, and it's Trevor Power. Trevor, how long have you been coming here?
I'm here since the start of the market. I'll be here 19 years in November. It's been busy.
Busy, and over the 19 years, has things changed much here?
It has. At the start, it was a hard sell to get people to come to start. It started off slow, but I think more and more people are getting into where the food is from. All the eggs here are from our own farm. We're in Ballinamult, County Waterford. So people are more aware that they want to know where the food is from and who produced it and what the hens were fed, and that's getting more and more important.
I've asked this question to some of your colleagues here. Do people really ask you about where the eggs come from? Well, we know, I suppose everybody knows the hen lays them, but more importantly, do they ask about the welfare and how the hens are you know, are they out in the open? Are they free range? Are, you know, these awkward questions we don't like being asked.
No, well, as for me, I'm happy to be asked. Like, I produce the eggs on our own farm, so I have no problem at all. And we're asked, I'm asked here every week about the feed, about the hens, are they looked after, are they out? And all these questions, and they're important questions. But the difference is they can ask them here and I can answer them. So,
okay, how many hens have you laid? There's an awful lot of eggs here now.
There is, we have over 11,000 hens, in four different flocks, and 30 acres for hens,
So I gather you sell them to more than farmers' markets.
Yeah, I do the farmers' market in Dungarvan as well, but I supply super value stores in Waterford and Tipperary. I supply a lot of restaurants, a lot of hotels, so it's very busy.
Now, there's an old saying that the chicken always dies in death.
Well.
I'm quite sure you, as somebody who keeps hens, knows all about it.
Well,
do they die in death?
I think they don't. I'm still going for 19 years.
After 19 years.
I haven't gone broke yet anyway, so it's okay. It's 7 days a week. It's 365 days a year. But look, there is an income in it, but we won't say it's easy. It's okay.
I presume, you know, production methods have changed considerably since you started 19 years ago.
Hasn't changed a massive lot from our side. We've kept the farm.
But there's mechanisation as far as
It is improved,
presentation and all that.
Yeah, it is, and packaging and all this side of it is changing. The farm itself is very similar to what we started off with. It's a good feed. Feed is really important. I buy my hens off the same person I did since the start. So from that point of view, it's simple if you keep it that way. It's the feed and the hens is the most important thing. If you get them right, then everything else is pretty straightforward.
And do the same people keep coming back to you every single Saturday morning?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like and the other markets you go to?
Yeah, people with me from the very start since I started, and they're still coming, so it's good.
So if anybody wants a fresh egg in Clonmel, drop down every Saturday morning to the farmer's market. You're sure to get one. Is that the way it is, Trevor?
Yeah, exactly. We'll be here every Saturday morning. Yep.
Okay. Well, look at Trevor. Thanks very much for having a chat with me. That, listeners, was Trevor Power. Listeners, you're welcome back. My three estate agents are still with me. And for the final part of the program, we're going to talk about what they see happening in their business over the next 12 months. And I'll start off with you, James. What do you see happening, or what are the major changes that may take place? And I know we're talking in a vacuum, but there's always changes.
Yeah, there's always changes, Jim. I suppose I can continue to see supply being a problem. Mm-hmm. I think interest rates probably have leveled off to some degree, and that will bring a bit more certainty with buyers anyway, certainly. Other than that, we, as I mentioned before, we're lacking new developments in my area anyway.
Your area, yeah.
And that's something I don't see changing, mainly due to the base cost from a development point of view. Until that changes, and I don't know what the government can do in relation to that, but they're going to have to do something to encourage development in small areas like Newport and the surrounding towns and villages. And other than that, I do think there will be good demand for farmland during the year. Certainly our level of inquiries is up on last year. We do have a number coming on the market in the next month, 2 months, which I would expect good demand for. Most of those buyers will be local buyers as well, I would expect. I think the dairy market has settled down in relation to milk prices, and cattle prices will most likely remain strong for the year, I would think, which will help underpin farmer confidence as well.
I presume cattle prices, when you talk about cattle prices, there is no light on the horizon that input costs are going to come down significantly to leave a greater margin.
I don't see it at the moment.
No. So that will be a mitigating factor rather than a plus. Okay, Seamus?
Yeah, similar to James, and I think 24 will be pretty much similar to 2023 in terms of the agri end of it. Land rents have softened a little bit. I think land prices will hold. Interest rates, there's talks of them coming back marginally, which we could get a quarter or a half percent. I think that'll just give that little bit of confidence again. The housing end of it, of course, supply, as the lad said, is still a big issue. A town just up the road from me, in Port Leash, there's nine developments under construction. Those builders, 12 months ago, were able to turn those houses out, 3-bed semi at 350. Now they're saying they need 375 to 380 with the input costs increasing and especially the labour end of it, the increase in wages and this living wage and so on is having an effect on everything. So I suppose in towns like Ross Grey, to say that we're selling our 3 and 4 bed semis in the region of 190 to 210, 220,000. So we're a long ways off the replacement cost of a new house. So supply will continue to be a problem both on the selling end and on the rental end of things. And I suppose we also need to mention it's the year of elections, and there's never a downside in the year of an election. There's money always being put in, I suppose, and hopefully 24 will be as good as 23.
Okay, Owen.
Similar to the lads, unfortunately I see the demand and supply balance being totally out of kilter. The demand is going one way, the supply is going the other way. I don't see that changing anytime soon. And that's across all sectors of the market, be it residential, agriculture, rental of properties. Probably people are starting to have to look outside the box in terms of to try and find, rather than paying €500 an acre to rent land, guys are buying land up a mountain that's SAC. That they can't be planted for forestry, so they can maybe buy that at €4,000 an acre and they'll use that to dilute their nitrates and make their repayments on the loan on that versus paying top dollar to rent land in. Same in terms of buying houses, people are having to look at alternatives, buying an old pub or whatever and converting that into a house because there's no demand for the old pub at the crossroads. So I think supply is going to be a big factor across all sectors for the next couple of years. Looking even at there's only 9 trainee plasterers in Munster at the moment. Where if a builder does want to build a house in the morning, where are they going to get the tradespeople to build the house? It's just not out there.
Okay, Seamus.
Yeah, just to add there something we had missed that day, but we had mentioned it last year in our conversation. The vacant home grant for the derelict house, their houses are. I've had a number of those sold last year and have been a big success and still are. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a great initiative. I think it's brought a lot of stock that was there sitting idle for the last 20 and 30 years and maybe 40 years in some cases. People didn't see the value in buying these properties and bring them back to life and bring them back to a home. So, that has been one success story, in my opinion, in rural Ireland on the government's behalf. It was a good initiative. And it's been run by the local authorities and they've been very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course the minister increased the level of the grant as well in the past year. So that will help that market.
Yeah.
But I don't see that many of them now,
certainly a few of them out there,
being done up. I can identify where there are plenty of them. Mm-hmm. They're not being done up.
I suppose there's a process there, Jim, and people have said that. I think the stats I understand in Tipperary has been 1,000 approved in Tipperary, is what I'm told. Mm-hmm. And something we looked into recently. But by the time you get your approval and then you get your builder in and get your work done and so on, you see a lot of those starting to probably be developed this year, the ones that were purchased last year. So there's a little bit of a lag there between buying and getting the grant approved and then getting the builder in. So
there's one thing people tend to forget about that as well, Seamus, is that you actually need to have the money before you commence. It's not it's great to have the grant, but it's not free money out there, and that's one thing that I've seen a couple of people being misled by,
I know, you have to spend the money to get it back,
And it probably needs to be extended to include commercial properties in the towns and villages, and even ones that are not empty 2 years. Mm. There's several shops that have closed down in the last 6 months. I don't see why some of them couldn't be granted to convert into residential.
Yeah, and that was the next question I was going to ask you all, because a conversation around a dinner table or in a pub or golf club or wherever you are, somebody will say, oh, there's an awful lot of derelict buildings in Ross Grey and in Thurles or wherever the case may be, and there are, and there are, some of them are allowed to fall down. Surely something can be done about those.
It's the cheapest way to do it. The structure is there, you have the bones of it. Just go in and do the renovation. It's cheaper than starting with a greenfield site and planning permission and all that goes with it. So it's an initiative. You're right, Jimmy. Should be followed through more. Should be, as Owen said, expanded further. And I think they're on the right track. They just need to focus more on the grant situation and maybe expand it out.
Yeah, we've seen it in Newport where one or two shops have closed and been sold, and the buyers have taken it on themselves to turn them into residential.
Yeah, one could imagine that would be a viable proposition.
Yeah.
Any last comment, Owen?
Thanks for having us.
Oh, no, it's no
a pleasure
problem,
as always.
No problem.
Thanks,
no,
Jim.
No problem.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you.
Okay, well, okay, listeners, that was Owen Dillon, Seamus Brown and James Lee talking about their businesses and how they have done in the past year and what might happen in the future. And I want to thank you ever so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
That, listeners, is AgriPort for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll join me at the same time next week when I will be paying a visit to the Clonmel Farmers Market. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock, and after that, Eamon de Wire presents Down Your Way.